Welcome to Enneagram with JB, a podcast about Enneagram personalities, where you'll uncover and discover more about yourself and others through the helpful tool of the Enneagram. I'm your host, Julie Underwood.
Today, I am talking with Krista Harden. Krista is a relationship expert, author, as well as a host of the popular Enneagram in Marriage podcast. Krista has been working with and researching marriages for 2 decades, providing hope for couples who are struggling to find their light, their love, and a mission together in any season of relationship. Her most recent Amazon best-selling title is The Enneagram in Marriage, Your Guide to Thriving Together in Your Unique Pairing, is now available everywhere that books are sold, which is so exciting. So welcome, Krista.
Thank you so much for that glowing review. I love all you're doing out there too, Jackie. Thank you so much.
It's fun to have two women in the same, circle, like doing Enneagram and marriage and caring about couples and that coupleship, and knowing that it takes time, and we're both similar stage of life. And so it's really neat to be able to sit down with you today and have this conversation, especially as we're in February, the month of love, right? And so some of us may be feeling like, yes, this is a great month. And other people may be like, this is a terrible month and let's not call it that. Or why do we have to do this anyways, But before we jump into all that, goodness, can I ask you a couple questions?
Absolutely.
Where do you live? Let's start there.
I live in South Florida. It's the West Coast. So Sarasota, Tampa, St. Pete, for anyone who wants to come down here for spring break.
Yes, yes. I'm in Nashville. It's like I woke up to snow this morning, which is so bizarre. Is it a little warmer where you are at least?
It is. We had a lovely lunch yesterday on the water. And then today it's chilly, but of course I'm from the Midwest. So I understand the depths of how much colder it is everywhere else. But this morning we had to bring blankets outside for our devotional. Like that's not a big deal.
Yeah, no, that is not a big deal. That sounds lovely for a lot of us,
right,
in the exactly. Middle of winter. I love it. Okay, how many years have you been married?
I've been married for 22 years to my husband, Wes.
22 years, and how many children?
We have 3 children, Hannah, Melody, and Jack, and they're from 18 to 11.
All right, you're right in the thick of it. We're a little bit ahead of you, 25 years, and 21 to 15, we have 4. With the twins that are 15. So 21, 20, and then twins that are 15. So those teenage years, you guys, they are beautiful and fun. And they can also be a doozy, it really depends on those kiddos, I think.
I think you said it well. Mm-hmm. The personality is huge.
Yes.
When you're dealing with teens.
It really is. It really is. This work with the Enneagram, which we're not going to necessarily talk about this today, but this work with the Enneagram does give us great insight into understanding our kids' like growing personalities. And not that we're trying to change them or put them in a box or anything at this age, but it is helpful in the parenting space to understand like, oh, I wonder if this is why the reaction was so big, or I wonder if this is what they're really trying to say to me. And so I know we're going to be talking about, love and relationships, but parenting is part of that love and relationships.
Yes. I just heard that from an author who said, I love this book called All the Light We Cannot See.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. You know that book?
Yes. Somebody just recommended this book to me.
Oh,
yes.
Yes. It's so good. And there's a Netflix as well. And oh, it's gripping, especially the audio book. Some books I really prefer to read, and this one was great audio. Anyhow, it was really a cool moment when I was just reading up on the author. And he said that he thinks marriage should be named 2 different things, before kids and after kids, which I thought was so insightful. He's like, it's so different. It should be named something different.
It should be. It should be. There's so many, it's so hard. Like we just celebrated 25 in December. So we went on this big trip, just the two of us, and we reflected on a lot of that. It's like, it was not easy. Like the first 20 years, you guys were really, really hard. The fact that we're still together is kind of amazing. But all through it, like, growing businesses or careers, you know, maybe not entrepreneurial space, but even grown careers and raising children and the pulls that happen inside of that. And then you're still trying to nurture your relationship and everybody is overwhelmed or tired or, you know, exhausted or overstimulated by the environments, depending on, you know, your own background that you're bringing into the relationship. So there's just so much depth in that. But we'll get more into that in just a couple minutes, but let me ask you a couple more questions just that are kind of lighter maybe. What's your favorite restaurant or type of food?
Oh my gosh, this is so hard for 7, as you know. We love all of it, but I will say lately there's a place in St. Petersburg. It has been such a wonderful setting because it's very 7-like where you go downtown. It's on the water. There's Jeeps everywhere. There's people on multicolored rollerblades or skateboards. And then there's a bunch of people like myself, obviously just walking. And it is so fun to just go downtown and enjoy I don't even know the name of it, but when you go on the boardwalk, there's just one little place for pizza and snacks, and it's got ice cream, and it's just such a special little dive to just hang out with friends. Every time we have somebody who comes into town to visit us, we're like, let's go to St. Pete, walk on the pier, grab a little pizza, have a little setting. There's a Kilwin's ice cream, which is a Michigan ice cream branch, but now it's pretty much everywhere. So we usually head over to Kilwin's after that too. So those are kind of my favorite, is like the moving, walking, sightseeing kinds of eating, especially as I get older and I can't gorge as much as I used to, where like, yes, I love Outback Steakhouse. My husband and I went there for our date this week, but like, I don't feel the same now that I'm in perimenopause. Like after gorging on a lot of food, I have to take it a lot lighter. So
that walk and all of it, the scenery, everything, I would love that too. I'm with you. Like it's all about the experiences. And the more that I recognize my 7-ness, the more that I'm recognizing it's about the experience more and more, you know? And we've been doing this work for a long time, so we're still learning things about ourselves. Okay, so Valentine's Day, this is the month of love here. So do you like to get flowers, candy, dates, gifts? Are you that kind of person, or what's your thought on it?
You know, I do, and I understand that there are people who don't, but I really do. Like, I have a very strong one-to-one subtype as well as self-preserving, so I really like, okay, you get it, then I love to have my husband and I get each other gifts and really go out for a nice dinner. Most of the years about half of the years lately, I've been doing a glow gala where I have people come and dance and couples buy tickets and we dance at Pier 22 on the water. I'm not doing it this year because I'm doing more online events, but I think that's nice too because my husband actually asked me, you know, what I wanted to do. And there were some events around town. And we just both said, we need some time just us. We're so busy, as you mentioned, Jackie, with kids. And I'm like, we're always doing leadership-oriented things. So we just felt like this year for Valentine's, we needed a little time away. So actually right before that is our dating anniversary. And we're going to go to Tampa, West Gottesdon, overnight at a hotel. And we'll just have a nice night for us.
I love that. Valentine's Day, last year, Valentine's Day, my girls, they were 14. They were like, hey, we want to do a Galentine's. Can you bring all of our friends to dinner? And so Steve and I, we brought all of their friends to dinner. They sat at a table away from us. And then we treated them all. It was just this sweet, I think you need different things in different seasons. And maybe you even need different things from year to year in your marriage. So for us, it wasn't about us needing this space last year. And then this year, it's kind of like, I don't know what we'll do necessarily, but I don't necessarily feel like it needs to be inclusive, which for in the years past, though, there was times that we needed that because we hadn't got a lot of that throughout the weeks and months and years probably. But right now, it feels like we're pretty filled up in that area. So it's neat to hear the difference, you know, it's kind of like, and I hope you guys, as you guys are listening too, if you guys are in a relationship, it doesn't have to be what everybody else does. It's what you guys individually need. And so really paying attention to that, because it might be that it's been a heck of a month and maybe you need a massage more than you need a dinner. And that's okay too.
Exactly. So that people do not have to look at other couples.
Yes. Yes. The individuality, the work that both you and I do with couples around understanding the individual person you're in a relationship with, that that really does change the game inside of your relationships. But okay, tell the audience, what is your Enneagram type?
I'm a 7. I lean toward the wing 6, and I have the self-pres sexual for my instincts. So my last one is my social. And that means, obviously, to some who know the instincts, I'll give this a little tip for those who don't. I'm not as good at reading the nonverbals of others or getting inside their emotions. I'm not as good at just having a lot of energy for social. And I'm really sensitive to being outgrouped. And that has its own history that's long, but some of that was where I was outgrouped. Some of it was where I was outgrouping others. And when I came to Christ, I made it my mission to stop outgrouping others. And it was a really huge moment in my life transitioning. It was the same time from high school to college. And so that's been a big part of my personality. Even though I'm a 7 who loves groups, who loves inviting in extroversion, I really need my interior time. And I really feel the safest with the people who actually care. And I'm learning to discern that because like I said, I'm not the best with nonverbals. So it takes me time sometimes to learn like who my people are.
That's so interesting. So I'm a 7 with a really strong 8 wing. I wish it was not that way, but it is. It's just fiery and feisty, right? But that piece around needing time has been huge. And I do think that that's the growth side of a 7. With that 5, it's understanding the importance of taking that time, slowing down, being more intentional. But that takes self-awareness. And I think it takes kindness to self, because we're always, the 7 and the average range, or maybe even the unhealthy range, is always looking for stimulation so they don't have to necessarily feel what's happening or what had happened in the past. And so when you are doing your work, or, I'm going to say doing, I'm not going to say when you've done your work, because I think that it's a forever journey of doing. I feel like when you're doing your work as a 7, you crave the quiet, you crave a different rhythm than you maybe once lived in. So people even kind of assume like, you're just always up for it. And it's like, we want to be, we do, but we're not always up for it.
Exactly. Yes, you said that so well. And if you live many seasons, then you know that, and you know how it can hurt your marriage when you're living in a way that you're not meant to live, because 7s don't have the body type energy fully of, like, say, a 1 or a 9 or an 8 who might be able to even go longer. We do live in our heads and analyze, and it's part of our gifting. So we have to honor that too, by not being quite as out for exposure all the time. Like you said so well, we need our time to retreat and rest.
I use this phrase, information is not transformation until you activate it. And I think for us 7s, we can consume a lot of information. So we can be storage containers of information. But until we actually activate that information, it's just information, right? It's like we haven't really done the work around it. And so one of those things with the 7 is all the thinking that's happening in our head. To get from head to heart is the hardest work you'll ever do as a 7. It is really, really hard work to get into the feeling side, because we've been conditioned to not be in that space because it's not served us well. And so to be able to do that work, to get into the feeling side and to really take in the information and then know what to do with it. So whether it's individual work or even in your relationship with your partner, it's like paying attention to what's actually happening and then moving into it. I feel like the change agent for a lot of us is like taking the information and doing something with it, not expecting somebody else to do something, right? But for us to take ownership and for us to do it.
Ooh, wow. Yes. So good.
I mean, you guys, we have to do our own work. So Krista and I have done our own work, and are doing our own work as we talk to you guys. But let's talk about this relationship. So you wrote a book, I wrote a book on marriage and relationships, right? We're both super passionate about this. And you've got so much knowledge when it comes to relationships. Will you unpack where the passion for this particular topic started in your life?
Yeah, it has felt like a calling since I was a little girl. I was actually giving my mom and dad advice in their marriage when I was really little. And I have a very intellectual family. And my dad, even though he's a very strong 8 and he's passed now, but he was so enthralled by that. He was like, "You are good at this." Like, he's laughing, like, "What? You're telling me things that I need to hear and in a way that is palatable." And I would just kind of communicate to my parents, not all the time, obviously, but once in a while, where I would pass notes under their door. My mom was very 9-ish or 2-ish. And, you know, they would, I think 9-ish more in the sense that she would sort of shut him off, cut him off. And then he would feel that coldness and the power of the 9 when they cut people off. And then he would be like fierce in his 8, but there's nothing you can do to penetrate the stubbornness of the 9. So I would offer little relationship tips, like I said, under the door or from the back seat of the car. Looking back, knowing I'm a 7, I was probably doing so to restore my inner equilibrium also. But it was kind of funny. He's like, "You're going to be a lawyer one day." And then my brother's a lawyer, but I really was like kind of made for this. So even as of high school, I started to give advice and write for advice columns in the newspaper and all kinds of things like that. So after I sort of got, like I said, off of that popularity track, I began to see myself as a person who might actually be able to do this. And then I got into my clinical studies of communication studies and psychology studies through my bachelor's and master's. So I landed in the field sort of much better than I would have had I not really gotten to that sobriety that the 7 needs, because I was just sort of flippant and this party girl who didn't think I had any gifts. And when I would have a gift, it was like my friends and I were so quick to excuse it that we were like, "You know, she's not smart, you know?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not smart. Why did I get a good grade on that ACT? And so it kind of had to take some time. And I felt like my faith journey brought me into the sobriety I needed to attach myself to my gift.
That is powerful. That, I mean, like to know you today is different than I'm sure to know you back then. Oh my gosh. And I think that a lot of people probably think that, you know, like who you see us today is not the, you know, is not the person that we were back then. And even if we say that in marriage, like I think that, you know, in relationship, I think this is super important for people to understand that I've been married 25, you 22. So who we marry, they are the same person, but they are different people. So if that makes sense, like there's so much difference, there's so much growth that happens in us over the years. And we want to embrace that. We want to embrace the growth that we're doing and our partner's doing. And so even to hear you say that, like the party girl, and I can't even, I mean, she's so sweet, you guys. like, I'm like, "Oh girl, we probably would have gotten in trouble then back in the day." We would have.
I was bad.
Me too. But there's so much discrediting that happens to this Enneagram 7 personality as far as worth when it comes to what we offer the world. Because, you know, 7s are like, if we're fun and happy people, then that's kind of how we keep the chaos at bay a little bit. You know, we're not 9s, but there's a little bit of desire around like conflict and chaos. Let's keep that away from us. But the 7 does it maybe in a crazy way that people wouldn't assume that. But a lot of it is that, like, how do I keep my, you know, my world safe? And so hearing how you tried to do that little and then and discredited some of that along the way, and here you are today, it's just fascinating.
It is, and how sometimes our Enneagram work was being done before we knew it. That was exactly what was happening, but I couldn't have named it till much later. And there was still a lot more to do and still is, but it was, I can remember still having a heart in there. Like you said, it's hard for some of these Enneagram types to access our hearts, especially 7s. But my friend, who I think was in the 3 space, he's a doctor today. He's a gifted doctor, but he was in my clique. And I remember him pointing to me and saying, "Don't you just feel like we're better than everybody?" And I genuinely looked around, and this was good, as I go, "No, I don't feel that way. So even at my worst, I knew this is just popularity seeking. It's nothing. It means nothing. We're not better than anybody else.
I love that, that seven neutralizes the authority. We're like, we're all in this thing together, you know? And I do think that there's this beauty that the seven does offer around accessibility. Like, we'll hold space for people really well. I don't want to say this across the board for all sevens, but sevens that are doing their work, there is this space that that they just feel like, you know, we are all in this together, and they want to lean into that space and help out in that space, which is really cool. Okay. So both you and I use the Enneagram in our practices, and we both have books on the Enneagram, all that good stuff. You've studied relationships for over 2 decades, and you're passionate about people feeling seen, heard, and understood. Will you share why you believe the Enneagram is a helpful tool for couples?
Sure. I think that there's a lot of great assessments out there, but the Enneagram having 9 differentiations gives us enough change between each personality that there are a lot of variants between people. There's not just 2 or 3. There's about, you know, 9, honestly. And I think it's a really nice system to differentiate, pure and simple. I like how it can go very deep for those who know this system really well. It can take you through these layers we've been talking about today and even deeper, richer marriage layers in organized ways, or you can just use it at a very basic level. So I love that it's both robust and sleek and elegant. And I think the word is elegant, that it's a system that can be used on a very basic or deep level. And all of the other tests that I used in my training didn't have that capacity. Also, instead of 4 letters or on a trait scale of percents, we get to just look at 2 types together and see how in relationships they bounce off each other, balance, cast light together. So I think it really helps to have just the 2 types and then to look at you and your partner together with those 2 types. It clarifies a lot. Would you think so too?
Yes, I do. I think it clarifies a ton. I think that, you know, I'm always really careful when it comes to the typing to make sure that we're not putting labels on our, you know, ourselves or our partner. And so when, you know, the surface work of the Enneagram, I think that it's kind of fun and, you know, it's like, oh, you're this, you're that, you're this. I want to get below the surface of that, even at that basic level, and just say, we are not these things, but we're presenting in these different ways. And so if we understand why, then it's going to give us such a better understanding of the person. And so I do a ton of work when I'm working with couples or even individuals around those messagings, those early childhood messagings, because I do think that they give us insight into what we're trying to protect ourselves from and what we're trying to get in this world. And so that work, I feel like Steve and I had done a ton of counseling in our marriage, and we'd gotten, you know, through a lot of difficult situations and things with a lot of different modalities. But the Enneagram is one of those tools that began to kind of peel back the layers of the why. So, you know, as an Enneagram 7, I want to know I'm going to be taken care of. But it's not at a financial level, although that's very nice. It's at an emotional level. Like, I don't know that anybody will hold space for me to have my true emotions. I don't know that anybody cares that I have feelings. So as a 7, I learned to stand independently and to push against anybody that tries to come too close to me. You know, and then the really beginning to unpack how that was affecting my marriage, where I'm like, you're not showing up for me. You're not doing this. You're not all the finger pointing. And then to realize that I had a wall up in a lot of areas of my life, in my heart, that he couldn't access because of fear of being hurt, betrayed. I know that sounds like an 8. It's in there, that 7-8 wing. But at the bottom of it, it's like, I really want to know I'm going to be taken care of. So do you find that there's certain messagings that when you're working with couples that they really, it like clicks, it helps them to understand each other better?
Yeah, I do. I really like using the triads for that, the heart, the body, the mind. I like using the messagings, like you said, our internal fears and wounds, and also our gifts. And I do feel like that's the other piece is as you're going deep, you get to this truth a lot sooner. Doesn't mean you don't take time to work it out. I think that's what people get confused on, is we're not rushing the work. It's clarifying the work, because if you're just in counseling or coaching, it can take months or years, quite honestly, to do the work. You'll eventually get there, but it's going to take a lot longer if you're not on a clarified path. I once wrote a whole chapter for a book and it was the wrong path and it was a different book. And I was like, I wish I had seen this earlier. And that is how life is, quite honestly. If we're trying to reach our spouse and we think they're over here, but they're actually having this other inner wound that's different, we can miss them. And of course, even my friend in high school in his three space, he was in a space where he wasn't sure who he was. So you hope that your spouse and you will do the work together. And I know what I find fascinating in couples is sometimes when I'm doing my work to come out into my emotions, because my husband and I both have the repressed emotion, we don't do that very well together. And so we have to be really brave and courageous and take a lot of deep breaths, because early in my marriage, I came out a lot as a two and really tried to live in that space of feelings. I think we see a lot of movies, and even as sevens, we learn vicariously. And then I learned from my husband, no, you're not safe with my emotions. And so pulling them back, going back into seven and living out this gluttonous, busy life was the temporary solution that we both lived with a fair amount of satisfaction, because he didn't have to deal with my heavy emotions. Neither did I, but life started to get too busy, too activated, and the issues just kept getting bigger. So when we found Enneagram, we could now label that. We could now intentionally get in those emotions. And so did my clients. So it was really kind of folded in together. I did the work with a first 3-9 couple at just after Wes and I did our work. And that's not, you know, the way I do it now, because that was my first couple. And I said, this is a new system. I think you could use it. You're in a dire straits place. Would you be willing to try it out? It helped us a lot and it helped them so much. So I'm so glad for this to kind of, like I said, get us going when we're in dire places.
Yes. Yes. What Enneagram number is your husband?
A one, social one. So almost exact opposite in terms of detail and planning in different ways than I do. And the feeling of right before relationship and the feeling of having to move all the time, or there's guilt, and not move in fun ways, but move in dutiful ways. So it was really rubbing us in different ways when we tried to, like, you know, become each other. Sometimes we would do that where I would be like, all right, I'm gonna be just like you. And that didn't work. Or he would try to be just like me. But now we're learning, no, we have to be who we are and a little bit start rubbing off on each other and allowing each other to be who we are.
Yeah. Yeah. There is beauty in that too. I think that the longevity of the relationship, you do see each other in yourselves, you know, like my husband's a three and sometimes I'm like, you're so seven, you know, like he's got some spontaneity in him. You know what I've loved to watch? I've loved to watch the childlikeness come out. And it all has to do with feeling safe and secure, doing the hard work, being vulnerable. But being vulnerable is incredibly difficult in any relationship, you guys. So as you're listening to us talk about this stuff, vulnerability is really, really tough. Even for our twos that you would feel like that's probably not hard for them. Yes, it is, because they want to be wanted and loved. So being vulnerable feels like exposure for our fours that are deep in those feelings. That vulnerability is like, you could crush me. I don't know that I want to expose myself to you. I'm going to withdraw, pull away. You know, will you chase me? Will you come find me? You know, and depending on your partner, they will or they won't, right? So this couple work, I do love this system because it gives us such a like insight into what's actually happening below the surface. And I think it gives us an opportunity to grow in empathy. And so, you know, I think that that piece is huge when it comes to partnering with somebody else, is understanding the, you know, empathy matters. How have you seen that show up? Is there any story that you could share with us around work that you've seen the Enneagram do in somebody's relationship?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the couples that I worked with once was a 4-6. And the 4 wanted to, if for those who are unfamiliar, they really wanted to go to the depths and have a lot of deep conversations. And the 6 loved them very loyally, but they wanted to live a bit more in a planned way. And they wanted to be early for things. And the 4 wanted to be late. And they were coming to me for that reason. Like, what in the world? Like, this is, you know, we're past the honeymoon season. And it's really irritating us that one of us needs to know everything. The other one wants to be this artistic 4. And where they ended up meeting was in that exact space you're talking about, Jackie, where they had to look at what is each other's core wound. And for the 4 to see that the 6 didn't feel safe and had all that fear, 4s can relate to emotions. So that gave them space to be patient. And 4s can be quite patient with depths once they know them. So the 6 had to be vulnerable and say, all right, here's what's underneath. I don't feel comfortable sharing this. It took them time to get to feel like they could trust me even to share that. But then when they did, their 4 was able to say, all right, you know what? I'm going to start paying attention more to how I can honor you with your planning. But I also need you to give me my freedom and my artistry. And so that 6 would learn to set rhythms. And this was an older couple. So they had to learn, you know, you can teach people that have been going for a long time new things. And they had been through lifetimes together. And so they're like, he's like, okay, I can do this. And it was beautiful to see him, you know, anxiously moving around her and like, okay, she spent all week writing her book. What do I do? So sometimes there was some troubleshooting with a troubleshooting 6 to help him to have some self-soothing. So I'm sure you do this too, but a lot of the work I think of the Enneagram is finding the compassion and the stories for the why. And then him realizing, of course, she needed to have these depths and to feel understood, which is why she needed time on writing her book. But also just that sense of like, when we're trying these new pieces out that don't fit right, we have to bring in some self-soothing in order to do it well, or we're going to be cruel or ignore each other. We're going to have the fight or flight responses.
Yes. That self-soothing piece I think is so important for all of us. And I think that, I feel like I talk to myself a lot, and part of it is like, what just happened? You know, what just happened? Because when I was younger and in relationship, things would happen and spark and the fire would blaze very quickly on my side. So I'm more anxiously attached. I'm the pursuer in the relationship. So I would be like, how come you're not showing up? How come you're not coming? Like, why can't you show, you know, like, where are you? Where are you? You know? And he's withdrawn. He's more of an avoidant in the relationship. And so I'm the pursuer. He's a withdrawer in the attachment space. I'm the anxious attachment. He is the more avoidant. Not knowing any of this when you're 21 and getting married, and you think it's going to look this movie way, right? And then it doesn't. A lot of feistiness happens inside of that. It's like, hey, where are you? I need you to show up for me. I don't think you love me. I don't think you care about me. All this kind of stuff. All these years later, when those feelings arise, because they still do, you know, like, when we're in relationship with people, we're going to get stepped on. Things are going to bother us. But the important thing is that I own my own side of the story. And so that is a huge part of the healthy relationship dynamics, is understanding what's happening to you. So I can say, like, I just got super triggered in that moment. And I can walk a little faster because I want to move away from him. If I get triggered, I'm not moving towards him. And he today doesn't walk the other way. So if I get triggered or activated, he'll walk with me, maybe a little behind me until I slow down, and then he'll catch up.
Oh, that's great progress. Right?
It's great progress. Gosh. And then it's like, okay, what happened? And I can say, I'm really triggered. And he can say, like, what's going on? But I own my own stuff, because before I'd get triggered and it would be his fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said, I'm triggered now.
Yeah, I'm triggered. This is not the reality in which we are living in today, but something triggered something from the past, which is making me feel scared or uncomfortable, or my radar is up. And so we can, it's not, we're not against each other. It's like we can hold space for each other to not be okay. And then we can move towards each other when we feel safe. So that's, I feel like the Enneagram, and that is deep work. So we're not talking about surface work here, but that is deep work as you get into this. And if you like this modality, I do think that the Enneagram offers depth of knowledge around how to hold space for each other. Can you speak a little bit to that as far as like, what is something you've witnessed that you love when it comes to relationships? Like, what have you seen that you're like, I love when I see this happen and I can trace it back to awareness?
Yeah. Well, in my own marriage, I love when I can see Wes and I do some of the work that you talked about with your husband, where we can own our triad work in our Enneagram deeper spaces. And when I can lean into logic, for instance, I know you talk about harmonic groups and so do I in our books. And when I can lean into logic for him instead of what I can do, which is, I already said stay in positivity. I didn't say with a 6 and an 8 on both sides, I can also lean into reactivity. I think you alluded to that just now in your story that 7s can do that when we're triggered. And so learning to lean into logic with him, because he's part of that 1-3-5 logical competency group, has been a gift for me. And I find that when I do that, Wes often comes back with some healthy emotions to me and positivity. And some of that for me feels like for him, it's very natural. Not always, but sometimes I don't even have to say like, okay, I leaned into logic. Now, can you please give me a little bit of positivity? And it's been beautiful just to see that. Although recently, I did go deep with him, and I love this in the sense that I watched us doing our work. It was painful, but for any listener out there, it is going to be painful sometimes to do your work. And so he shared something a little bit triggering and hard emotionally. And then I used the time to share one more piece, a little triggering and hard. Cause I was like, okay, we're in it now. And it wasn't deep. It wasn't like he's processing a huge attachment wound. I'm going to try to trump that. It was more, let's piece this together. Neither of us likes emoting. So let's just have the important conversations. We're on a walk and talk. That's a good place for us. Most couples love walk and talks. Our kids weren't around. And he was resistant at first. He's like, oh my gosh, I just started talking about this and we got through it. Why did you bring this up? And I said, because emotions are hard for both of us and it really is going to come our way in a few days. And I just wanted to make sure we had the space so that we don't have to do it again in a few days. And then he was able to hear that with his logical brain and go, that is cool. All right, thank you. And then I ended positively and he's like, now why are you laughing? And I was like, because we have to walk back home and like, I want to have some joy. And so I think he was kind of learning, like, you need the logical, you need the emotional, and you need the positive. And that was fun for me to not just use with clients, but in my own life. And I did, you kind of hear, I did have to sort of educate my husband along the way. But it was worth it because he was willing to learn in that moment. And of course, we've had moments where he does not want to learn from his marriage therapist wife over 20 years, you know, but this one he did.
Yes. Yes. I think that that's so great on how you said that too, as far as like, we're really good at, 7s are really good at kind of seeing the future. Like we kind of anticipate what's coming down the line and we want to protect ourselves from whatever it is coming down the line. Okay. Like we, so future oriented, like we just, and so if you think about that, and then you've got, so my husband's a 3 in that logic grouping too. And he's not always thinking about the future as far as like safety, like we are, because we care about safety and security. And they care about, well, my husband cares about connections. And so for me, I'm like, hey, maybe it's a family situation. And I can see something happening and I'm like, we need to talk about this before, or we're going to fight about it after. So it's really like, And I don't want to fight you guys. Like, I know people are like, yeah, you do. I don't. I really don't want to fight. I will if I need to, but I don't want to. So I do think that that's so interesting. And there's lots of different pairings. And so some people might be in a relationship where it's more avoidant. Both parties are kind of avoiding what everybody knows is going to happen in a couple days. And then after time, it does surface. So what it, give us a little piece of advice, you know, if we think about all of the nine Enneagram types and the vast differences between them, what is a piece of advice that you would give all of the types around hard conversations, or, you know, kind of knowing down the line? If we could have it today, we could probably head off some things down the line. Like, what do you say in that? What do you think?
Good question. I think we have to stay focused on the present. And you heard me say a few days down the line. Before, I would have gone into the years, you know, I could see this happening in 5 years, 10 years. Now I've come to realize life is very short. You don't know what time you're going to get, but we need some week by week planning. And I think that's really reasonable. And so that's important, is to look at your week ahead and to say, what could come down the pike that could dysregulate us? And let's look at that together. And also to notice if there's something you've not picked back up from the past. So it doesn't mean that you can't look at the future and the past, but only where they're relevant. And try not to look too far ahead. Just for this week, what are we looking at? And again, with the past, we can really bring up deep attachment wounds. And most of the time, we need to do the work in smaller bites. I think that's really important, so that we don't get overwhelmed. So just to let somebody know, like, this is going to be one way I work out my bigger trust issues or my bigger shame issues, but it's not going to be all of them. Because as a person of faith, most of your listeners probably are people of faith too. You have to bring a lot of that to the Lord. And as you mentioned earlier, you have to do a lot of that work on your own. So the peace that comes to your spouse needs to be centered on practicality and love for today. And that's sort of what I was going at with my husband, was we've been doing so well. So just to ensure the next few days go well, can I just get a double check that you're going to do this in the extended family situation? Because we worked so hard and I used a lot of positivity language, not just because I'm a positivity type. That wouldn't have honestly happened if I didn't know the research around positivity in conflict. And it's a 5-to-1 ratio while in conflict. It's actually 20-to-1 when you're not in conflict, according to the Relationship Cure by John Gottman. But to be able to just stay positive was my way of keeping him aware that especially as a one, but it would have been the same if he was a three or any other type. I'm not shaming you. You are awesome. You and I have done beautiful work in order to make sure that we are continually regulated all week. Can I just get a reminder from you that you're going to stay on the same page with me in this situation, so that he has a lot of three in him, actually. You can have great connections with the extended family. And not just because he's a one and wants to do what's right, but because he has a huge heart and a big two wing and some three. So it's like he gets to that win of, I want you to connect really well with your people. But I also want to feel safe, like you said. So can we make sure we both know what it's going to take to feel safe? And we know the boundaries we need to set. It's just uncomfortable to talk about. So sometimes you have to go there.
I love this. I think this is so important. I think for all people in relationship to hear is that, have the conversations that you know that are going to set you guys up to win. I do think that that was, you know, one of the things that Steve and I learned early on in our relationship with our kids. We have, you know, some of our children just had some needs inside of our story. And so going into different situations, we had to look at each other like, we've got each other's back and we have our children's back, right? Like, we know where they are. Don't leave me high and dry in this. If this happens, this is our next step. So even inside of that, we were not against each other in our parenting, even when it was really, really difficult, you guys. We knew like there was just little cues. Like he does this little thing with his finger, like little swirly thing. And I know like it's time to go. He can see that it's about to go bad before it goes bad. So we're going to grab everything. We're going to go. So it was like some of those intentionality, you know, pieces. But then if you carry that all the way through, just like you're saying, have the conversations, because the safety and security within your relationship, when you know that you guys are for each other, that your words about each other are kind, I think that's super important. So what you say about your partner to other people really, really matters. You should be loving and kind, caring, supportive, protective of your person. If you're not saying those kind things about your person, maybe you could reflect on what happened, like where, why, what's going on, what do you need that's not getting met? Because that's likely what's happening, is that you don't feel covered. So therefore, you're not going to cover, you know? But healthy relationships, sometimes it does take somebody going first. It always takes somebody going first. But there's little tips along the way that can help you understand where you're kind of at in the relationship. And I do think that what you are saying about your partner is a good place to start. What do you think about that?
Well, I love that, because when we're not positive, there is a deeper issue. And a lot of the time it actually comes with us acknowledging our feelings. Any one of the Enneagram types forgets our feelings. And so to say the feelings word at the root of it can be helpful. Another way of saying that in a more positive way, which I also find helpful, is to say, here's what I need. Here's what I would love. And instead of putting that on them like a honey-do list, when you're starting to name your dreams within conflict, is what Gottman would say, but even just to name your dream, I would love to have a peaceful weekend. I would love to have a time where we had a special date. These are important statements that don't feel like a to-do list. It just makes your spouse feel like a total winner if you get to be provided that. And it starts to become something they want too, versus just, oh no, you know, one more thing to check off for this controlling person. And I noticed that one of the two things I said was, I want to have a peaceful weekend. So just like Jackie said, sometimes that's up to us to manage how that happens. Especially if we've worked really hard for our ministries and businesses all week and kids, we really do need that Sabbath. It's not something God hates. It's something God rejoices in. But our partners are part of that, not all of that. Or sometimes it is a particular in the marriage, like we work so hard for others and I really would love a date with you. So just try to use that language of what you would love versus forcing it on somebody.
I love that so much. I think that's a great place for us to just wrap up today, is that positivity and saying in kindness what we need, what we, and, you know, as individuals need. And then also maybe we even ask our partner, like, what do you need this weekend? What is something that you're looking forward to? What is something you are hoping for? I just think the more we can become aware of how we can love each other well, that there's strength inside of that. There's safety inside of that in our relationships. And so I just thank you so much for sharing with us today and for being with us and giving us all your wisdom as far as relationships and the Enneagram. Can you tell people where they can find you and connect with you?
Sure. I have a guide for finding your type at enneagramandmarriage.com, as well as links to my podcasts and courses and coaching certification and coaching practice as well, if you want some deeper dive services, as well as my book. So everything's at enneagramandmarriage.com.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being with us.
And thank you for joining us today. Join us next time as we continue our conversation about the Enneagram and what it means for your relationships. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode. And while you're there, we'd love for you to leave a review. Your kind words help others find the show. For more great Enneagram content, resources, and individual coaching, you can visit enneagramwithjb.com. And while you're there, make sure to order Jackie's newest book, The Enneagram and Your Marriage. We'll see you next time on Enneagram with JB.